Three ridiculous men, one beautiful game. Some Canadian guys talking about soccer.
All right, hello everyone, and thanks for listening to the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast, available on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. This is Daniel Squizzato, a.k.a. Squiz, and I am joined by my two fellow writers, fellow podcasters, and fellow Canadian guys. First, he's still emotionally recovering from Chelsea's victory over Napoli earlier this week. He's my fellow writer at CanadianSoccerNews.com, Grant Surridge. Grant, how's it going?
I think physically recovering, too. A little bit of both.
Well, a man who is physically recovering from something that he embarked upon last week, KJ's charity soccer tournament in downtown Toronto, is the third member of our troupe here. He's also a soccer writer for Sportsnet.ca and senior editor at Sportsnet Magazine, Jamie Doyle. Jamie, how's it going?
It's going well. Three thumbs up.
Is that the physical outcome of that tournament? You now have a third thumb?
Yeah, no, I have less. I've lost
that was things. Radiation exposure that caused that.
Yeah, I didn't gain anything in that tournament.
Is that what happened when they transferred the air bubble from BMO Field to Lamport Grand? They took it through the Springfield Nuclear Power Plant. Jamie's got three thumbs. Yeah. I've got three eyes. Well, I'm not going to go any farther with that.
Hello.
On today's show, as always, there's plenty to get to. Toronto FC advancing to the semifinals of the CONCACAF Champions League with an unexpected 2-1 win over the LA Galaxy earlier this week. We'll delve into that game and what that may mean for Canadian soccer. Big week for Canadian soccer on many fronts. We'll get into the first week in MLS, Vancouver v. Montreal to start the season, and some of the storylines that have come out of the first kick weekend. We will also be speaking with a former member of the Whitecaps, currently plying his trade in Scotland, and a member of the Canadian men's national team, Marcus Haber, the innovator of the 5S life system. We'll return to the show, and we'll be speaking to him a little bit later on. Even later than that, in promotion relegation, we will hit on such topics as young ladies, old men, and the South rising yet again. And in Taste the Trivia, we will give you, the listeners, a chance to not only provide some trivia questions for next week, but also to pick up some pretty neat Umbro swag. So yes, as I said, plenty to get to. But before any of that, Jamie, I do want to hit a little bit again on what I said earlier, the charity tournament that you and I took part in last week, raising money for World Vision Canada, organized by a fellow colleague in the soccer broadcasting world in this country. How are you doing, Jamie? Are you fully recovered? Because I'm not.
I'm all right now, I suppose. The weird, like, tendony area where ankle meets top of foot is giving me some trouble on both feet.
So I read somewhere that this tournament was organized by country or something. There was like a team.
Yeah,
Canada.
I think the idea it was organized by country.
I read somewhere.
It was probably just Squiz told
you. Yeah, it was on the Daily Mail. They cover this tournament quite extensively.
No, I think it was Twitter. The teams were organized by countries in which World Vision does its good work.
Yes, although we somehow ended up on Team Ontario, although I guess the idea is that...
Yeah, separatists, eh?
I didn't say that.
I did.
We got some nice Canada jerseys out of the whole thing, so that was definitely a good byproduct of that.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into the bulk of the show, a little bit of housekeeping. You folks may be accustomed to hearing this show come out on Thursdays. Those of you who have followed this show for a long time will also know that when it comes to scheduling, it's not necessarily our forte. And so what I will say for future weeks is that we're going to do our best to maintain a regular schedule with this show. But if you want to be sure that you're getting the shows as soon as they come out, you can follow the lot of us on Twitter to get updates there and subscribe to the show on iTunes. It's the easiest way.
Just stare at the iTunes page 24/7. Yeah. That's the best way to ensure you're not going to miss it.
Well, it could also cause a lot of other psychological problems for you. But
so could listening to the show.
I would imagine so. That's how we ended up creating the show in the first place. Psychological problems are common in Canadian soccer. Those who follow teams are generally accustomed to feeling down about themselves, being disappointed that results couldn't have gone their way. But as it turns out, last night, Wednesday night, Toronto FC did not the impossible, not the excessively improbable, but definitely unlikely victory over the reigning MLS champions. They're breaking new ground in the CONCACAF Champions League, moving on to the semifinals, first Canadian team to do so. Good game for the team, obviously, because teams that win generally do play well. But to get a bit of an overview on this, Jamie, I'm going to turn to you first. You are a self-professed Toronto FC fan.
I cheer for the team.
Yes, and so I will just ask you as a fan, what did you think of the game? Were there any players that stood out to you in that big monumental victory?
Normally, you get a game, and then there's moments when you think, oh man, this is all going to go against us.
But and then so like from the opening whistle to the final whistle.
No, exactly. That game was just TFC on the knife edge the entire game, and somehow it all worked out. They were playing the highest line they could possibly play at the back, and with their central defense shenanigans, it didn't seem wise. They were getting so close to being caught out. There was at least one LA goal that was chalked off for being offside that I don't think it actually was.
No.
And it was a huge gamble, and it all seemed to work out for Toronto FC, but I mean, I'm sure it took years off the lives of many fans.
Oh, no, for sure. And I mean, there were a lot of moments, a lot of things that did go in their favor when it comes to this game. You know, LA having to play on Saturday as well in their season opener. Bruce Arena making the decision not to rest his starters for that game. He played a lot of his core players, some of whom were getting a bit old, for three games in the course of 8 days. May have been a little bit of fatigue coming in. You know, could have been the crowd in LA. We don't really know what was at factor there. But we'll get into the nuts and bolts of the game a little bit more later on. But Grant, I'm going to turn to you for this one because you are not a self-professed Toronto FC fan.
No, I would describe myself more of a neutral when it comes to TFC.
Okay, so I ask you as the representative of every other person in Canada, what, if anything, does this win, not the win specifically, but a Canadian team moving on to this stage of the competition mean for Canadian soccer, if it means anything?
I think it will raise the profile of MLS and TFC specifically amongst people who may not already be following the Vancouver Whitecaps or the Montreal Impact, which is a good thing.
So you mean fans in those parts of the country?
No, I'm talking about fans maybe. Well, yeah, sure. If you're living in Montreal, Vancouver, but you don't really follow MLS, or if you are from Saskatoon or Halifax or something, you're going to be seeing these games on Sportsnet. You're going to be exposed to the media coverage of this run. So it's basically raising the profile of the game in Canada for everybody.
And there's also the fact that, I mean, everyone knows David Beckham, and everyone assumes that David Beckham is always kind of playing at a high level. And for Toronto FC to beat them, people who don't really know the game and tend, as non-hardcore fans do, to assume that MLS is a pretty crappy league, which is not the case. Watching TFC beat them and then move on in this championship and just, you know, do well, it can only help the stature of the league in the minds of non-hardcore fans.
I remember us having similar discussions about this, about a Canadian team making an improbable run in this competition and how it would help raise the... You know where I'm going with this, Jamie.
I know where you're going with this.
Help raise the profile of the game in this country, and it definitely did at the time, and a lot of that is still lingering on. Of course, I'm speaking about the Montreal Impact in the 08-09 rendition of this tournament. Got to the quarterfinals, had a lot of positive momentum, and then they ran up against Santos Laguna, specifically the game down in Mexico. That, of course, will be TFC's opponent in the semifinal round of this competition. So, Jamie, having seen what Santos has been able to do to Northern North American competition, of course, there was the giant comeback they had against Montreal in 2009, comeback / collapse, however you want to define it. And then earlier this week, we saw them take Seattle Sounders, definitely not a pushover MLS team by any stretch of the imagination, and beat them by a score of 6-1 down in Mexico. So is it almost dangerous for us for people to latch on too much to the TFC bandwagon at this point when... LA is one thing, but what we've seen Santos able to do, essentially I'm asking, does TFC have any hope?
I know, hope springs eternal. There's always hope. If you see the difference between the home leg and the away leg for Santos, that's where TFC's hope is, really. It's just kind of, you've got to get them at BMO.
Not playing an away leg?
Well, if you can get away with
that. Play both games in Toronto.
That would be fantastic. If you've really got to nail them in Toronto and then... just bunker in Mexico, I think.
Oh, that worked for Montreal.
And you've also got to not collapse completely.
To be honest, it almost worked for Montreal. They did score two goals in injury time. I mean, normally that doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, they don't ask how or when. They just ask how many. That's what matters at the end of the day.
You say that all the time. I don't know who these people are and why they keep asking.
Everybody asks how and when.
Yeah.
Excuse me, sir. How and when? Jamie, you talk about getting the home advantage there for Toronto. The folks at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment have said that if Toronto makes the semifinals, as they have, the semifinal home leg would be played at BMO Field. Mm-hmm. Is there any merit, though, now that this is actually going to happen, and considering what we saw at the Rogers Centre last week in terms of the fan environment and the way that helped the team, is there any merit, and Grant, you can weigh in on this too, to the idea of maybe playing the semifinal home leg at Rogers Centre as well?
I think there probably is some merit. I mean, it turned out better than everyone could have expected. It's a question now of can you, like, there was a lot of lead time and a lot of time to sell all those tickets, and now there's obviously less because this game's going to be at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get that kind of fan presence out again for a one-off game that doesn't have David Beckham?
But it has
some Mexican team that no one's
Mexican
ever heard
guys.
Of. So,
a lot of Canadians go to Mexico every winter.
If you, yeah. And, if you could get that same atmosphere, obviously it would be great, but whether or not you can do it, I don't know.
Grant,
it might be, yes. In my opinion, it would be better off just to go to BMO Field. You know you can fill it and do that.
Any merit to the idea of Rogers Centre?
Well, there's the issue of the field, right? I got the sense that the TFC coaching staff and players were not too thrilled with the turf at the Rogers Centre.
Yeah, that's been a clarion call for teams, you know, ever since the place opened, pretty much.
I would be kind of surprised. I really was hoping they did play at the Rogers Centre. I mean, that, even just watching on television, that looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, again, you know, I hadn't quite considered the time limit in terms of selling tickets, but if they could fill that place again, I imagine you'd even have a more sort of pumped up,
but that's
hyped
the thing.
Up atmosphere.
It's a big if, and if you can't do it, then it feels empty.
If
it's not completely full, it's going to feel very empty.
Yeah, having been to many Argonauts and Blue Jays games over the years at that stadium, I can tell you when it's full, it's raucous. You know, I've been there for World Baseball Classic and Grey Cups, and it's astounding. And then I've been there for, you know, August games against the Royals and, well, pretty much any Argos regular season game. And it feels cavernous, as you say. So, yeah, you're right. It is pretty dangerous in that way. But, Grant, I'm going to ask you this because
yes.
You are an expert when it comes to Mexico and Central America, the other teams in CONCACAF.
Yes, I am.
Obviously, going down to play in Mexico in the second leg is going to be quite an ask, quite a hostile environment. Is there some value, though, in the fact that, however Toronto FC ends up doing, some value in the fact that there are members of the men's national team player pool that are going to have get a little bit more experience playing in those kind of hostile environments ahead of World Cup qualifying? I'm talking about, you know, Julian de Guzman, Ashton Morgan, Terry Dunfield, guys who are probably going to be in the mix this year in World Cup qualifying.
Oh, definitely. I mean, anytime they go down there to play at any point in the CONCACAF Champions League, I think it's valuable. I mean, I realize that Santos thumped Seattle last night, but I think TFC does have hope in this. I don't think just because they're traveling to Mexico automatically means they're going to get hammered.
No, it doesn't, but and you're right. I mean, so far in this competition, you know, they needed to beat Dallas in Dallas. No one expected that. They needed to beat LA in LA. Few people expected that. So, of course, there's always the potential for it to turn out well.
I mean, according to, again, I kind of tuned in late last night on the Seattle Santos game, but it didn't actually even look like the stadium was sold out. And from what I understand,
Clearly Mexicans hate soccer.
No. But listen, from what I understand is that the CONCACAF Champions League is not exactly the big fish when it comes to what Mexican fans want to catch. I mean, they're more concerned about the tournament in South America. They're just not, like, these games don't always even sell out. So you might end up having a more rambunctious atmosphere at BMO Field than in Mexico.
Yeah.
Jamie?
Yes.
I'd take Grant's word for it. He's our Central American, South American CONCACAF
And that has been Grant's latest entry in the CONCACAF Diaries.
There it is.
Jamie, going back to the on-the-field performance a little bit here, mm-hmm. Some people were surprised when Milos Kosic got the start in goal rather than Stefan Fry. Kosic, of course, has shown himself as a capable starting keeper in the time that he's gotten with Toronto FC so far, specifically down the stretch last year when Fry was hurt. So Toronto now finds itself in a position, or at least now it's been reasserted that Toronto has two go-to potential number one goalkeepers in MLS. So where do you think they go from here? I mean, the whispers have been around Stefan Fry being sold to Europe for a long time. Do they hold on to them both, sell off Fry, and then turn to Kosic? Or do they, you know, hitch their wagon to Fry and move Kosic for some other kind of players, or do they just hold on to both of them for the long run and thank their lucky stars that they have them?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like they're just going to hold on to both of them and give them both playing time, because you would think that one very viable option would be to sell Fry off to Europe, use a bunch of that money to get yourself a decent center back. But they've gone through a couple of center backs. They've already gone through one this season, come and gone, and there's no necessarily any sign of them doing that. So
could they convert Stefan Fry to a center back?
That's the thing. I was actually going to mention that. That seems to be the solution. I don't know. Obviously, I don't think that would work, but it's a shame. I mean, they converted Torsten Frings from a midfielder into a center back, so... Yeah, give it a go.
Well, Frings can do anything. It can be French fries.
Like, play in net? He could be like a backup.
Well, I think that
they have to get rid of one.
No, Grant, they have a lot of keepers.
No, I'm saying if they get rid of one of those two, right, and then they're kind of they need like a backup, right?
He's kind of like the perfect backup.
Yeah. They can turn to the MLS emergency goalkeeper pool, which is a thing that exists, and which is, I think, how Kenny Stamatopoulos ended up playing for them back in their first year, if I'm not mistaken.
I like the idea that those guys live at the geographic center of North America, just to be, they all share a house like somewhere in, I don't know, Kansas or whatever it would be, just so they're within reach.
I like firefighters, slide down a pole, yeah. Get a call.
Dun-dun-dun, throw your gloves on. I don't know why I did the Batman entry there. They're all just sitting around a
they
red
live
phone.
In a cave.
Don Garber calls. They all push each other out of the way, shove their way to
it's the Garb phone.
Wow. Grant, before we move on, was there anything else that stood out to you from the game last night between Toronto and LA?
Yeah, I mean, watching it as I said, sort of kind of, I mean, I wanted TFC to win, but we'll say from a neutral perspective. I mean, having watched TFC over the past few years, I always had the sense that they were just going to like screw up. Whereas watching this game last night, maybe I was just drunk on my own glory from the Champions League earlier, but I just never really felt that they were going to concede a goal and lose their lead. It just always kind of felt... I mean, I know it's completely sort of... There's no, like, scientific evaluation to it. It's just me kind of watching them and thinking, you know what, these guys seem to be drilled together, and they seem to kind of know what they're doing finally under this manager.
Grant, if there were scientific ways to evaluate this kind of thing... There'd be no podcast. There'd be no commentary. No one would want dumb dumbs opinions.
I'm talking about somebody
of this
who
stuff.
Knows what they're talking about when it comes to tactics.
What do you mean? We don't, Grant?
Oh, yes. I mean, other than us.
Look, I've got some scientific analysis for you.
Okay, let's have it.
Chad Barrett was awful.
Yeah,
listen, I mean, that's science for
you. And there's just blind luck, too.
Yeah, well, he seemed to be confused as to which team he played for at that point. Like, he was giving the ball away, like it was going out of style.
Maybe,
which I think it did quite a while ago.
Maybe he was just trying to ingratiate himself back with the Toronto FC faithful.
Yeah, he's got a lot of work to do.
Paying them back for all the great support they gave him over the years. Toronto, of course, is not the only Canadian team that has been in action over the past week. Montreal traveled to Vancouver at BC Place to play MLS first kick over the weekend. Vancouver won the game 2-0. Not surprising to see them get a couple of goals. They, of course, have a ridiculous glut of offensive talent this year. It's going to be a really exciting team to watch throughout the course of the season, I think. But, Jamie, I'm going to turn to you first on this one as well.
Sure.
Take this in any direction you want. Sold out crowd at what are you doing, Grant?
I don't know.
What is that motion?
He's taking it in any direction he wants to.
Yeah, but it looked
Grant's
like
just gesturing to both sides. Wildly.
Yeah, it looked as
this
though
direction,
you were trying to
that direction.
You were trying to shove two gelatinous forms just out of your way as you were trying to go somewhere.
I've been seeing things lately, but just continue.
Anyway, Jamie.
Yes.
The Whitecaps and the Impact season opener. Any general thoughts on the game there or the atmosphere at BC Place?
The game was pretty much exactly what you would expect. To be fair, I thought Montreal had a better defense than they appear to. Maybe it's just going to take some time for it to all gel together because it's a new club, basically. It's all these guys who don't really have a lot of experience playing together. But, I mean, the guy they brought in maybe to anchor the back line, the former Italian international Ferrari, was at fault for one of the goals. It's not really what you want from your experienced holding the line center back, so... but yeah, like you said, Vancouver are just going to run wild with goals this year.
Grant,
yes.
Vancouver brought over their own high-profile international defender in the offseason, and I'm going to instantly expect you to have a whole lot to say about Lee Young-pyo, Young-pyo Lee. I forget which
YP
order the
Lee.
Names go in.
Right.
Yeah, YP Lee.
Right.
What can you tell us about him? Specifically,
well,
I'm asking
he's
here.
Korean.
Well, yes.
No, I mean, I didn't have a chance to watch this game. But
well,
continue.
No, that's why I mean. Just overall, you know, I think folks who watched the game thought he was definitely one of the strongest performers. You lived in the country
yeah, I mean,
for a while.
Honestly, when I was there, I mean, it was the two that was Pak Ji-sung and Lee Young-pyo were the two guys. Lee Young-pyo was in Tottenham. And those were the two guys. I can remember Koreans actually like going to like a central plaza in Seoul to watch Man United play Tottenham. So these were the two like the sort of pillars. He was involved in the 2002 World Cup run. So yeah, I mean, 5 or 6 years ago, he was pretty darn good. How he'll be, what he'll be able to contribute this year, I don't know.
All right. Well,
being a 30, what's he's like 35.
He must be
now.
In his mid 30s. Yeah.
Yeah, and as a fullback, he's got. I mean, it's a question of. How his legs are going to hold up, basically.
Well, they held up pretty well in the season opener.
Yeah, but that's one game in.
Yeah, one game a season makes. That's what they say.
They don't say that, and also you're missing some words in that sentence.
Well, whatever. Jamie, you've also been chatting up Torsten Frings on this show, and he, if I'm not mistaken, is 35 years old as well. So he's certainly had a lot of running to do himself.
He's built of German steel and efficiency. I don't know what that means.
Well, that's just a stereotype.
Yes, it is.
You know, those were the players that were on the field. Another player on the field during this game was men's national team veteran Patrice Bernier, signing of the Montreal Impact in the offseason. When he came off the field, there were, at the time, he was subbed out in the second half. And at that point, between two Canadian teams and MLS, there were zero Canadian men's national team eligible players on the field. Of course, Alain Rochette, defender for Vancouver, was born in Canada, but he's a Swiss international. So we're leaving him out of this discussion. So the question I'm going to ask you, Jamie, is does that matter at this point? I mean, is it more important for Vancouver and Montreal to put Canadians on the field or on their roster for the sake of it, even if they're not necessarily up to snuff, as we saw in the case of Toronto FC in their first season in MLS? Or is it important for these teams to get out there, make a good impression for their fans, become part of the civic fabric, and use that, leverage that, to help actually foster Canadian talent through the academies?
Well, you've made it pretty hard for me to pick option A there.
This is what we call a loaded question.
I think it's very much the latter, obviously. You don't want to see your Andrea Lombardo's wheeled out for no good reason and not ready for the level of play. And I think it's definitely more important that they just become popular and get a lot of people interested in the game, coming out to see the game. And it's also more important that they develop Canadian players rather than just play Canadian players.
Right.
It's more important that they develop local talent and put it out there when it's ready. As opposed to just like, hey, this guy's Canadian, let's put him out there and assume people are going to like it because he's Canadian. Well, I think most fans won't know necessarily or care.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what Bob Leonarduzzi was saying on the soccer show on Sportsnet, Fan 590 in Toronto, last week, that was, you know, Vancouver was kind of taking a long-term vision as it related to Canadian talent. Grant, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I mean, I was just, professional sports teams, really, I mean, they have two things they need to do, right? Win and make money, not necessarily in that order. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know, perhaps if having a lot of homegrown players that they develop and then have out on the pitch winning games, I mean, maybe in the long term, if you have that kind of vision, that is a good business plan. But, I mean, you can't just expect them to play Canadian players so to make up the numbers, right?
And especially if it's a question, like Montreal has Bernier, who is kind of a French-Canadian face of the team, and they had him out there, but there's no reason of keeping him out there if he's not having a good game, even if it means, well, we've got no more Canadians out on the field. I mean,
like
soccer reality has to take over at some point. And it seems like YP Lee is going to be one of the most popular players on the Whitecaps, regardless of what Canadians you wheel out on the field. It just seems to be a reality of the team, him and Jay Demerit. And you just kind of let these things be as they are. The fans are going to, you know, are going to be drawn to who they're going to be drawn to, and don't try and force a Canadian onto them just because of his nationality.
Forcing a Canadian onto them.
Yeah,
I think that sounds like a nice novel.
Sounds like a nice novel.
Yeah, I don't know.
What the hell does that mean?
A, that sounds like a horrible novel. It's not a novel.
Hey, I mean, look at this. I think it's something like English Premier League, 35%, something like that, of the players are English.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, you know, I don't think Roman Abramovich.
What if you take Manchester City out of the equation? Does that percentage
bump up a
bit?
I know that the lower you get, the higher percentage it tends to be of English players. Like, lower you get in the league table, I mean.
Hey, I don't know, man. Mm-hmm. Norwich City still in the top half. They're pretty full-bloodedly English.
No, but I mean, I as an Arsenal fan, I mean, I can tell you that no one is choosing Kieran Gibbs as their favorite player over Robin Van Persie just because he's English.
What about Theo Walcott?
Yeah, no one's picking him either.
He's just not very good. That's the biggest problem with him.
In a top 10 best teams in the world, he is a fairly inconsistent player. But to say that he's not very good is wildly inaccurate.
I don't actually remember now if Norwich is still in the top half, but I think I think the point probably still stands. No, you make good points, gentlemen. And
thank you.
You know, I mean, we spoke to Patrice Bernier on this show a few weeks ago, and he said that he wasn't coming over here to just sell tickets or to put his face on posters. He was here because
even though he is selling tickets,
his face is being put on posters. Although apparently. I heard someone told me that that some TV station in Quebec, it was like a rugby association, they were running an ad or something, it was like, don't be sissies, like soccer players, and it had like Bernier's picture in it, obviously completely not with his permission, but I don't know why the hell that would even run. But
can use my face in the don't be a sissy campaign.
Where was I going with this? He said that he's not just here to sell tickets, he's here to contribute to the team, and I think that, you know, as much as we would like for there to, you know, as much as we would like for the Canadian teams to just be completely full of Canadian players who can then join into the men's national team player pool, if those players exist, I think that, you know, these teams would probably try to go out and find them at this point. But it's going to take time. You know, you look at a team like FC Edmonton that's just overstocked with young Canadian talent, and, you know, I don't doubt that some of them probably could compete in MLS or could compete at a different level, and hopefully they're gonna get their opportunity at some point. Grant, was there anything else you wanted to say about Montreal v Vancouver or elsewhere in the first week of Major League Soccer play?
Oh, I just wanted to mention some of the really amazing the TV audience in Canada, like 500,000 people watching this game, compared to the number from the U.S. on NBC Sports, this new network, was 82,000. Not very good.
That was
at New York Red Bulls and FC Dallas.
Oh, well.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good job, Canada.
Yeah. And I mean, that actually, I did a bit of research on this one. So that was actually more people than watched the last season's UEFA League Champions League final. In Canada. So the number in Canada was bigger than watching Impact Vancouver was bigger than the number in Canada watching the Champions League final.
Last year?
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's something.
That's very promising.
To me, that's kind of amazing because it's still, I mean, I wrote a post on Canadian Soccer News about this last night, but in the United States, you still have European soccer really kicking MLS's ass on television. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of interesting that in Canada that doesn't seem to be happening as much or anymore.
Well, I mean,
we'll
again,
see. I mean, I don't know. It was a season opener.
Yeah, it is a season opener. But you know what? You've got Montreal playing their season opener at the Big O this weekend, you know. 50,000 tickets
50, 000,
sold.
Yeah.
Playing Toronto FC in a couple
That's
weeks'
better
time.
Better than a kick in the pants.
Playing Toronto FC at Olympic Stadium again in a couple weeks' time on Easter weekend. There's going to be traveling support from Toronto, and I know that the folks in Montreal are going to be riled up about it as well. So it looks like the grand Canadian soccer spectacles are just continuing. Jamie, any final
the grand
note?
Grand scheme is all coming together. Yes.
It seems like we're going out of the first segment on a high note here. So anything else you wanted to add?
I can hear the horrible laughter
coming from
Castle Grayskull. Say something negative. I don't have anything negative to say. Really, it's all good. Unless you're a Montreal fan, when things are looking pretty dire.
Yeah, one game.
Well, their solution to their complete lack of offense is to sign a 36-year-old Italian who's out of club.
Yeah, well, that could work. He's now.
Why didn't they sign a 30-something Montrealer who's out of club?
Who could you be talking about?
Hint, hint.
He's actually not out of club. He's still
with the
team.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, yes, that was my mistake. Right.
He's just physically out of the
club,
I guess.
Why don't they use him, man?
Yeah. Well, the stranger things have happened, I suppose.
Changing the topic quickly, another Quebecois player who did well was Andre Haino, who scored a winner for the Houston Dynamo in Week 1 in MLS play. Good for him. And Portland put out another good crowd in their first week, and that's pretty much all that I can think to say.
Did you see there was a video of the Portland crowd singing the Star Spangled Banner?
The Portland crowd is nuts. Toronto, it makes Toronto FC's fans, even in the first couple of years when it was like a big thing, just look like nothing.
That's not going to endear. That's not going to endear you to very many people, Jamie.
Necessarily, it doesn't make them look like nothing.
Well, not nothing, but it's certainly they have makes certainly, them look like they weren't there. Taken fandom to the next kind of level. Like that that crowd would not have been out of place in the Premier League,
right? But I will say this, and you know the fans in Toronto have this at their disadvantage. You look at Portland at Jeld Wenfield, as most actual proper stadia have. They have bowl seating around so that all the sections are connected. BMO Field is a piece of crap. It was built quickly. It was built on the cheap. It fell apart almost in its first year. Mm-hmm. And that is not to take away from all of the, you know, nostalgic and emotional connection that the fans have to it. But it's not a stadium. It's a
series of stands.
It was actually featured in that Neil Young song, "It's a Piece of Crap." I don't know if you remember that video. It's Neil Young dancing or sort of bouncing around a room, continually saying, "It was a piece of crap." And I guess maybe he was talking about BMO Field. Yeah.
That's amazing that he would have known that it was going to be built and also formed an opinion about it ahead of time.
Exactly.
An accurate opinion. But I see what you mean, Squiz. I mean, if you can fill in that corner in the southwest corner with stands and kind of link the supporters groups and maybe put a bit of a roof over things to bottle in the sound, it would change the atmosphere greatly, but doesn't change the fact that the Portland fans put on a bit of a ballyhoo. Yeah.
But they, again, in Toronto FC fans' defense as well, Portland did have many years of build-up to their entry to MLS in the second division, and they did have the increased excitement of the regional rivalries that they had and still have with Seattle and Vancouver.
Trying to qualify all of my broad statements.
Jamie, essentially, I'm trying to make sure you don't get shanked the next time you go to the Duke of Gloucester in Toronto.
There's always a good chance.
That could happen regardless.
Nothing to do with soccer.
With soccer at all. And again, it should be said, though, that that Toronto FC has put in a lot of money to improving BMO Field in the last few years, building the facility at Downsview Park, the academy, and everything like that. But BMO Field, it's not a stadium. It's a field with stands around it.
Yeah. All right.
No, I mean you can't really argue with it.
So it's going to be a great venue for the CONCACAF Champions League semifinal in a few weeks' time. I think that pretty much wraps up week one in MLS and the CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals. Anything you needed to know has been said right here, so we'll move on to a bit of a different area.
Yeah. And also, don't look for any more information. You've got all of it.
Yeah, that's it. Just log
off. Stay away from the internet. Don't answer the phone.
Log off the internet. Go outside. Breathe some fresh air. Yeah. We're going to be speaking to now a member of the Canadian men's national team player pool and a member of the Canadian men's Olympic team that's going to be trying to qualify for the London Games this summer, striker Marcus Haber, right after this. Joining us now on the line from Glasgow, Scotland, Canadian striker Marcus Haber. Marcus, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. We're speaking to you today. we're speaking to you today. You're going to be joining the Canadian U23 Olympic camp on Sunday as the team is in camp down in Florida, attempting to get ready for the qualification tournament for the Olympics this summer. You're actually going to be one of the more experienced players on that squad when it comes to experience with your club and with the men's national team. So how do you feel about being named to that team and about going to join them shortly?
I'm extremely excited. It's a group of players that, you know, I'm familiar with, obviously, having played together with a lot of the guys. And, extremely excited to get together with them and, hopefully we can, qualify for the Olympics. I think, obviously that's the goal and, I think everyone's looking forward to it.
Being one of the more experienced players and having had a bit of time with the senior team, is there a bit of a temptation to just kind of lord it over the younger guys and just kind of, I decided to come down here and play with you guys, but I could really be up with the big team?
No, I never look at it that way.
I guess I'm just putting my own perspective on here.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna approach it put myself in a leadership role, obviously having a bit more experience than some of the younger guys, and just trying to help everyone and bring a good morale to the team and just stay positive. Obviously, we haven't had a whole lot of time together as a team. This is my first camp, and we're gonna have to gel quickly, and hopefully things can come together in time.
Hey, Marcus, it's Grant here. So I noticed compared to, say, United States or El Salvador, that, as you mentioned, the Canadian team hasn't really had much time together. Is there anything that the coach does differently in this situation to sort of get you guys ready really quickly?
I think, you know, the big important thing, obviously, he's going to want guys to come into the camp fit and, you know, ones that are playing regularly with their clubs. And that's just the main thing. Obviously, he's going to want to go through, you know, some way of playing and some shape and stuff, I can imagine. So when we get in, everything's just going to be accelerated. I think, you know, the main thing is just to, you know, play with confidence. And he's going to want, you know, want players that are able to get up and down the park and, you know, ones that can express themselves. So, you know, it's going to be... You know, it's going to be quick, and, you know, it's going to be thrown together quickly. So, you know, we're obviously going to try and stay confident and just come in there with, you know, with a presence.
And you got, you're playing one friendly, right, against Trinidad?
Right, yeah. I think that's the day I come in, actually, on the Sunday. So I don't think I'll be in that one. So I don't get into the evening. So it'll be just into the tournament for me. But, yeah, I think they've got a couple friendlies before I get there.
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of picturing now maybe you just, you know, come in on a helicopter, land right next to the field. You get like a Macho Man Randy Savage kind of entrance with a lot of pomp and circumstance as you make your way to the field. Have they talked to you about any kind of entrance like that, or probably not, eh?
I don't know if that really suits my personality, really. I'm a quiet guy, and I try and stay quite humble, and that's just not really me. And you know, I'm everyone else on the team is going to be just as important as I am. I'm a team player first and foremost, so no great entrance to me. I'll be getting off economy flight just like anyone else.
Go economy.
No helicopter, huh?
No, unfortunately. You mentioned, of course, the team is trying to qualify for the Olympics here. You've been with the senior national team as they've been in World Cup qualifying, which is, of course, the pinnacle for the sport. But the Olympics being part of that potentially is, I think, something that that most athletes dream about. So from your perspective, what would qualifying for the Olympic Games mean to you?
It would mean a lot to me, personally. Maybe not as much as some footballers in the UK. I mean, I think the Olympics has always been a big deal to me, just because growing up in Canada, there's a lot of other sports, you know, that are involved in the Olympics, obviously. And I played a lot of sports when I was younger, and I always followed the Olympics. So I mean, for me personally, it's, you know, be a great honor and just an amazing experience to, you know, to be a part of that. And not only just for the football, just to be, you know, a part of the, you know, the games and, you know, seeing everything around you and the other athletes. I mean, it's an amazing experience, you know, just, you know, football aside. But I think it'd be amazing. And for me, it'd be, a great thing for everyone.
So, Marcus, can you tell us how your season has been going so far in Scotland?
My club's had a great season so far. Knock on wood, we're in a battle to qualify for the Europa League. And, with the size of my club, St. John's, and, finishing in the top six in the SPL would be, you know, amazing for us. And right now I think we're fourth or fifth on points. And, things are going well. And, I'm featuring a lot. And, contributing a little bit, so I feel like I'm developing a bit, and it's good to get minutes. So
now you're at St. Johnston now, as you said, but your former club, Vancouver Whitecaps, putting on a bit of a show earlier this week or last weekend, I should say, with their season opener at BC Place, taking on the Montreal Impact.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to watch that game? And if so, what did you think about the team that they've got now and the environment at the stadium?
I did watch the game. I watched 90 minutes of it, actually. I streamed it on my computer, on my laptop.
Legally,
and,
though, right?
Yeah, it looked amazing. The atmosphere, the fans, the stadium. And the Whitecaps look like a different team from when I watched them last year. I think they've got, you know, some great players going forward with Hasley and Comienzo. And I think the new signing, Latou, looks like he's given them an added dimension. So, the club looks good. And I think, the work they've done in the offseason looks like it's paid off. Obviously, it's just the first game of the season. But, they look quite convincing, I think.
We were talking a little bit earlier on this show about the fact that in a game between Montreal and Vancouver, Patrice Bernier was the only player on the field there who is currently part of the Canadian men's national team player pool. But we also alluded to the fact that you know, Vancouver, especially with their residency program, the academy set up, they seem to be taking more of a long-term approach in terms of building up talent that may not be there this year or next year, but in a few years from now, they could be joining you and your teammates in the men's national team player pool. So as somebody who was part of the Whitecaps system and has now moved on and is a member of the men's national team and playing professionally in Europe, can you add any thoughts about where the Whitecaps sit or maybe that approach that they seem to be taking right now?
I mean, it looks a lot similar to, you know, sort of a European-based setup over there. I mean, the residency program, it's quite organized, and I think, you know, they're looking to get the best youth players across Canada and develop them. So I think, you know, they seem to be doing things well, and, it's a lot different from when I was a youth coming up. They didn't have that program. So, you know, when I was 15, 16, 17, if you wanted to develop into a decent player, I mean, you had to go to Europe. But I think today it's a great opportunity for young kids that, you know, that might not be ready to make the jump abroad and, you know, want to stay closer to home and then, live closer to families and stuff. So it's something that's amazing. I think, you know, with guys like Russell, obviously, he's a product of that. And, it just shows that, they're on the right track, and I think they're doing a good job.
You mentioned that you were watching the Whitecaps afar in the season opener, sold out for soccer at BC Place. We saw last week sold out stadium in Toronto for TFC in the Champions League. This weekend they're anticipating a sellout at the Olympic Stadium for Montreal's home opener. And So as a Canadian playing abroad and kind of seeing this from afar, are you getting the sense that there is a lot of positive momentum around the sport in the country right now? And do you think that may transfer over to support for the national team as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fan base is always going to be there because, you know, there's a lot of interest in the sport. It's just about, if the clubs perform well or not. I mean, I think the Whitecaps, they're going to get, you know, whatever, 20,000, whatever they may be, you know, regardless. I think it's just if you want the interest and if you want the support, I mean, it comes down to the performance on the pitch. And I think, you know, if the Whitecaps do well and the Toronto does well and Montreal does well, you know, gets into the playoffs or whatever, I think that'll do a lot more for, you know, the overall support with the national team. And I think, if it starts at the club level, I think you'll start to see, you know, more and more support for the national level, for qualifiers especially.
So, Marcus, a lot of people are saying this, the group Canada has this year, the men's national team with Honduras, Panama, and Cuba, that's a great chance to make it to the Hex for the first time since the late 1990s. How do you see Canada doing this year, this time around?
I look at the draw, and I think, yeah, just like you said, I mean, this is as good a chance as we've had in a long time, just looking at the draw. And I think, obviously, it's important, I feel, you know, going forward to pick up points at home. And, those are going to be the important games, the home games. And, if we can get 3 points, in most of our home games, and I think, anything can happen. And obviously, that's the goal, to get to the Hex. And I think, we're building towards that, and I think that we have a group of players that, has the possibility to do that. So, things should go fine if we keep performing.
You mentioned the group of players that you've got, and we've spoken to a number of them, and we've taken off one thing that you probably didn't intend for us to take off, but when we spoke to you last, we spoke about a 5S approach to life and a 5S kind of system of living that you had tweeted about once, probably only thought about for about 5 seconds, but that we've, for some really ridiculous reason, just latched on to.
Completely blown out of proportion.
And I believe it was the 5S's are soccer, sushi, sneakers,
sleep,
and sex.
Not in that order.
No, and we've got a few people to add here and there. To St. Ricketts has added scoring onto that, keeping with the five with the S's.
Right.
David Edgar has added dogs. It doesn't have to be an S.
Well, no, he said series, like television, keeping up with pop culture.
Yeah, but I think he wanted to go with
his
dogs. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Being the man who started this whole thing, is there an S that you'd want to swap out of there? Is there an S that you'd like to add, or just another letter altogether? Maybe we can spell some word with a lot of S's.
Six or seven S system.
Yeah.
You put me on the spot.
Yeah, we do that a lot, actually.
I do have a sneaker addiction, so I mean that's a problem for me. I mean, I'm running out of room in my apartment for two. So
you're like the Imelda Marcos of Canadian soccer.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe that should be one I should switch sneakers for savings. Maybe
saving.
There we go.
This is very practical. 2 years of maturity between the last time we spoke to you and now has a. You've gone for a more balanced financial approach.
Okay, so it's now the 6S system with saving added on.
Yeah, you can add saving in there. Maybe I'm maturing as a human being. There
you go. Well, no, I
like that you have to laugh while you're saying it.
Well, I don't know, Marcus, if you were a baseball fan at all, or if you've followed the downfall of Jose Canseco and where he's ended up. But I think that he is a very clear indication that saving is a very important fundamental building block of being a professional athlete.
Oh, you're going to say he wasted a lot of money on shoes.
Yeah.
No, Canseco wasted money on something else that starts with S.
Yeah, exactly.
keep that out of it.
So
good. I like that.
don't do those though.
No,
those are bad.
Spend your money on sneakers instead.
Yeah, sneakers is good. The other S, not so much.
So Marcus, when we've had some of the members of the women's team on here, and they've talked about they do this thing before the games, they sing a Celine Dion song. So I'm kind of wondering for you guys, do you have any sort of special rituals or things you do to like to psych yourselves up before you go out and play?
Celine Dion, really? What, like My Heart Will Go On?
Power
of Love is theirs.
That was it, yes.
Okay. I mean, that would really pump me up. I mean... No, I don't really have any rituals. I'm not weird like that. No, there's nothing really.
So then what kind of what's going on your iPod right now? Like what kind of music do you tend to use either before the game or after the game to get yourself in the appropriate mindset?
I like Jay-Z and Kanye's new album. I got Watch the Throne. That's a good one. Drake's new album. Got some David Guetta tunes, just in case they want to get really amped up. But yeah, no, just the basics really. And then I got some slow jams, like some Frank Ocean, if I want to wind down. So that's what I'm listening to right now.
So do you, in the dressing room, do you guys have like a one sort of speaker system, or does everyone have like their headphones on and they're all zoned into their own thing?
Most guys have the headphones on, so we can't really hear what's being played anyways. But yeah, we got one guy, our captain at my club, he controls the iPod dock, so he's controlling the tunes. But he usually puts on the kind of stuff that I like, so it's all right for me.
Well, the Canadian women have already booked their place for the London Olympics, so when you get down to the under-23 camp, it might not be a bad idea to give a little bit of Celine Dion a chance. Maybe that kind of Canadian magic will rub off on you guys.
Yeah, maybe I'll make a request
or maybe
one track on the iPod.
Or maybe you'll just play some music that'll annoy everyone before the game.
Don't mention us if you do that.
Yeah, okay, I'll keep it between us then. No problem.
That has been striker for the Canadian national team as well as St. Johnstone FC over in Scotland, Marcus Haber. Marcus, best of luck for the remainder of this year, well, and beyond that as well. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and thank you for putting up with our nonsense yet again.
It's been a pleasure. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right, that of course brings us to the segment of the show that we so affectionately call Promotion Relegation. Each of us picks a story that we like to promote and a story that we don't like to relegate. And this week, we're going to have a bit of a special twist on this. We're going to do a first ever group promotion in addition to our individual promotions. It's a story that we think deserves as much attention as it can possibly get, although you've probably already heard it. But if you haven't, we are throwing ourselves fully behind it. We'll get to that momentarily. But before that, Grant...
Yes.
As usual, I will ask, who or what would you like to promote?
I am going to promote Puerto Rico.
Very well. Nice tourist destination.
I've got a job on the tourism board now, and I just think it's a fantastic place to go visit. You should take your family and enjoy yourself.
Great.
I was reading, actually, on my way here, that they have organized themselves a friendly with Spain.
Hold on, Grant, you prepared your promotion on the way here?
No, I was originally going to promote Chelsea's comeback, but then that's a bit of a sort of homerish way to go
wank
about
fest,
it.
Wankfest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we don't want to have any kind of wankfests in here.
Ah.
I think that for a Puerto Rico to land Spain in, they're playing at the stadium where the Puerto Rico Islanders play in August. I think that's fantastic. That shows some serious ambition. Go get them, Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Like, Brazil played in Gabon last year.
We discussed this. Don't.
Yeah, no, okay. We discussed it before the show. People didn't hear it. I'm just saying that, you know, it is kind of cool.
All right.
Okay. These kind of matchups. Well,
good for Gabon.
I'm agreeing with you, Grant.
Okay. All right.
I'm saying. Anyway.
Sorry, I'm just a bit defensive today.
Whatever. Jamie, who or what would you like to promote?
I'm going to.
Stupid head.
I'm going to promote the good people at California State University at Dominguez Hills.
Woo! What?
This is the university campus upon which is located the Home Depot Center, home of LA Galaxy. And that's where Toronto FC, of course, played the CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinal match last night. And I'm promoting them for their inane, ridiculous rule whereby on a school night, as if we're all children and as if David Beckham has to get to bed early, on a school night, to not interfere with, you know, students' ability to learn, they've capped attendance at the stadium at 7,500 people.
I like the fact that this university is apparently afraid of an MLS game or a sporting endeavor interfering with students' ability to learn. I looked up the other day the biggest sports stadia in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Six of the largest stadia of the top 10 in the world by capacity are football teams, not professional NFL teams.
Oh no,
college football teams.
Yeah, we're talking about Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan's up there. Plenty of them.
Rose Bowl must be up there.
Yeah. I'd imagine it probably is.
Maybe they should aim higher. They could be as good a school as University of Michigan.
Well, wait a minute.
If they let this go?
What is the capacity of the Home Depot Center?
I want to say it's around 25.
Yeah, it's like 20 some odd thousand.
So, 8,000 screamers, whatever. 7,500 screaming fans is not noisy, but 20,000 is. I mean, I guess. I don't know.
I think it's more to do with, like, people getting in and out and maybe student can't get to class or something. I really don't know.
I can't find my classes, all these crazy Galaxy fans.
Well, they got jerseys. Is this a cult? Is the UFO taking us home? I'm surprised you guys didn't ask what the largest stadium in the world was.
It would be Azteca, wouldn't it be? In Mexico?
It is up there, but it is...
Oh, no, the one in Brazil.
The Maracanã?
Nope.
No, the Maracanã right now is in shambles.
It is a soccer stadium,
I'll give
though.
You shambles.
What does that mean?
Please don't.
Soccer stadium?
You've got me.
All right, well...
It's not BMO Field, is it?
No, because it's not a stadium. I'm going to promote, not only giving you guys a trivia...
Wait a minute, did you...
Trivia question that I'm not going to answer. I'll let you think about it.
What are you talking about? You're not going to answer it.
It's in North Korea.
Here we go.
It's called the Kim Il-sung Memorial Glorious Stadium of Light.
I'm not sure what it's called, but I think
like 150,000 people or something.
Yeah, okay. I think the name is just based on the area where
you know,
it is.
In as
like
much
that.
As I know about that, you want to talk about a field with stands beside it. I think that's what that pretty much is, just a lot of stands.
Okay, well, if they can put, you know, another 130,000 seats at BMO Field, whether or not they connect the sides, I would then call
it
a
stadium. It's just bleachers reaching up into the sky.
150,000 people to watch TFC.
Oh, Lord.
Someday, Grant. Someday.
Exactly.
In the meantime, I am going to promote the Canadian Under-20 Women's National Team qualifying for this year's Under-20 Women's World Cup in Japan, originally scheduled for Uzbekistan, until, shockingly, FIFA found out that Uzbekistan wasn't ready or prepared to host a U-20 Women's World Cup. So Japan stepped in, and they are now hosting the tournament, in which Canada will be a participant. The other entries from CONCACAF are... Can you guess? The U.S. and Mexico. Qualifying for the tournament still had a rough final against the U.S. in the CONCACAF regional final. Does this also sound familiar? Losing to the U.S. in a CONCACAF regional qualifying tournament final. Bit of a harder fought game than the senior women's team had in Olympic qualifying, though. Canada was up 1-0 until, I think, the 72nd minute, but then they pretty much ran out of gas, which was weird because they were bunkering. But... the U.S. team got two late goals. Still, some promise coming out of the team. This is going to be the future of the women's national team. And so good on them. And the U-20 Women's World Cup is a tournament that's going to be here in Canada 2 years from now. So it's worthwhile to get involved and get interested.
I like the idea
Not get involved. What the hell are you going to do?
Well, you can try.
I want to join
involved,
the team. I want to try out.
hand out flyers, sell hot dogs. I like the idea of, without any information, just completely ignorant of any reality and going off any stereotypes that I might have in my head, just trying to think of all the things that Uzbekistan is presently ready to handle at a moment's notice. And I think it probably begins and ends, in my mind at least, at some sort of cross-country horse race.
What's the capital of Uzbekistan?
Tashkent.
Hello.
What's the population, Grant?
I don't know. You got me.
Oh.
I win. Me.
See, these two
now
have...
Tell me the answer to the stadium. Oh, you already did.
I did. It was North Korea.
Well, let's move on.
I'll tell you two things about Uzbekistan. Apparently, their potassium is inferior, and the men's national team will qualify for the 2014 World Cup. I've been saying that since last year. It's going to happen. Anyway, Jamie...
How long have you been saying the potassium thing?
I don't know. Where did that come from? No, that's Ali G's thing. Or not Ali. What the hell is Borat?
Borat?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. I see. There we go.
I get what's going on here.
And again, most people who watched that movie didn't realize Kazakhstan was an actual country. So, Jamie, in being geographically intelligent, you are definitely in the minority. But anyway, that special group promotion we were going to do, which sounds kind of dirty, also a bad novel. Jamie, who or what would we like to promote?
It's funny you ask, since you already know. The answer is Sir Dave Richards. most people will have found out about this already. It's unbelievable. He was at a sport and security conference in Doha, the capital of Qatar.
This is the chairman of the Premier League.
Yeah, chairman of the English Premier League. And he's gone on just a bit of a curmudgeonly old man rant against Johnny Foreigner. And he said, "England, quote, England gave the world football. Then 50 years later, some guy came along and said, you're liars. And they actually stole it. It was called FIFA." And then he goes on to essentially kind of mildly argue that Qatar has to put aside its Muslim beliefs and let English and German people get drunk during the World Cup that's going to be held there. And then, as if that wasn't... I mean, he said that these were kind of... He's since said that these are kind of lighthearted remarks, and maybe he was joking a little bit, but he came off very poorly, and the Premier League very quickly distanced themselves as far as they could from what he was saying.
So he's saying people need to be able to go there and get drunk at this tournament.
Yeah, and also that these non-English people have just stolen soccer from England.
Uh-huh.
But then he went on to, just later on that evening, fall into the hotel pool.
No, it was a fountain,
it was
right?
It was like a fountain pool. Yeah, it's in the lobby. Apparently they were
okay.
He was walking with the chairman of Bolton Wanderers, apparently. And
did some wandering.
I've seen a video
own.
Of it, and it's actually just like a low pool that's kind of sunken into the ground of this courtyard of the hotel. And he didn't see it, and he just walked right into it and fell onto it, like face first, wearing a nice suit. But it's just like the perfect cap for like an old man going on a crazy old man rant is to then subsequently fall into a pool. Oh my God.
You were talking about how this kind of reminded you of Chris Farley, you know, like doing his motivational speech and falling into the table.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Which just launched this discussion before this show about our favorite Chris Farley skits is what happened.
It pretty much is. He's just like, yeah, horribly awkward and embarrassing rant followed by a like ridiculous pratfall. It's solid gold comedy.
FIFA, in a nutshell. Grant. Yeah.
Yes.
Take us down from that. Who or what would you like to relegate?
With pleasure.
I'm going to relegate, so
I was watching the Chelsea game last night, and I noticed that the Napoli fans in their end of the Stamford Bridge, they were hanging the Confederate flag, and I kind of thought to myself, what the hell is that all about? So I did some research, and apparently certain supporters groups across Europe still, they take the Confederate flag to matches, and it's not really clear whether it's just sort of like an anti-establishment, kind of like, you know, F you to the man type thing, as opposed to being anything more serious than that. But at the same time, I kind of think these guys should know better. They obviously know what the Civil War is. They know what the flag is. It just seems like a very inappropriate thing to be hanging in your supporters section.
Well, I tweeted this at you yesterday when you mentioned this. You mentioned, hey, is that a Confederate? I think that it's actually just kind of they're against the Washington cronyism insider, Lincoln and his carpetbaggers and all this kind of stuff, and they just want to secede from the
they're
Union
all, like,
and have their
Civil
own
War
Confederacy.
Yeah, they're all, not, they travel to the southern U.S. every year and like put on all the old clothes and
it's nothing to
that's
do
really
with,
what it's about.
Nothing to do with the history of racism or slavery or anything like that. They find that equally as appalling as we do, but they're just, you know, they disagree with carpetbaggers and Abraham Lincoln and his Federalist policies.
Well, I mean, I am driving down to North Carolina later tonight to visit my brother. Maybe I'll see, like, the Napoli supporters section at one of those, like, Civil War battlefields doing,
the Chapel Hill Napoli supporters club.
Yeah, maybe it's like teams have, you know, players have jersey exchanges at the end of the game. Maybe these two areas of the world, for some reason, have had some kind of flag exchange.
True.
You know, they've just sent their excess Confederate flags to Italy and... Okay. There's a whole bunch of Napoli paraphernalia in Rally Durham somehow.
See Merrick Hamschick with a Tar Heels jersey on.
Jamie.
Yes.
Who or what would you like to relegate?
I'm taking off of that. I took something else away from the game that Grant is referring to, the Chelsea-Napoli game last night, and I'm going to relegate Didier Drogba. For even in what can only be seen as a spectacular triumph for Chelsea and a good game for Drogba personally, not only to come back as one of the, you know, the old guard that Andre Villas-Boas wanted to get rid of and score a fantastic goal and then put Chelsea through to the next round of the Champions League. He was just diving and flopping, and he managed to embarrass himself even in this great triumphant game. And there's specifically the one dive, it's just the worst, where, who is it, Napoli's Salvatore Aronica just kind of dragged a hand a bit across Drogba's face, or not his face, his chest, and he went down in a heap holding his face, and then did the little, and the camera caught him, did the little peekaboo.
He kind of looked like a kid who'd, like, you know, eaten, there was, like, pie cooling on the windowsill, and he just, like, ate all of it, and then was trying to, like, hide behind his hands.
Yeah, but then he just kind of looked to see, sorry, I just covered my mouth there, he looked to see if the ref had noticed and given him the penalty, and then saw that somebody was looking at him, and then closed his eyes again and was back in pain again. It was just the most obvious, like, childish flopping around, and it's an embarrassment.
As I said, he stopped war in the Ivory Coast. Come on, how can you relegate a guy like that?
He's going to start a war in this room if he keeps up that kind of behavior.
Well, now, let's settle things down. There we go. Once again.
That was a lion.
I'm going to relegate vaguely something that you've relegated in the past few weeks, Jamie, just the situation in Brazil in the run-up to the 2014 World Cup. You've mentioned in the past the fact that FIFA and the Brazilian Federation are a bit at odds over the fact that Brazil doesn't really appear to be prepared to host this World Cup as of yet. Now there has been a changeover at the head of the Brazilian Federation, the name of which I don't have in front of me, but Ricardo Teixeira, who was the head of it, and one of the people who was very frequently named in the book Foul by Andrew Jennings when it comes to FIFA's senior members who may have done some untoward things. You know, you got Sepp Blatter and Jack Warner and Teixeira up there as well. He resigned over poor health, which I looked up, and it apparently is diverticulitis, which is kind of a serious stomach ailment. It's what Brock Lesnar got when he went hunting in Manitoba. MMA fighter, Grant?
Oh, that when he went on his big rant about the Canadian healthcare system.
Yeah, and then he's
system.
Like, oh, it's like I was getting healthcare in a third world country.
Well, the first full circle for this will have to come when this guy starts complaining about the Canadian healthcare system.
Yeah, when Teixeira steps into a ring. Anyway, the guy he's been replaced with, or at least provisionally, is another longtime member of the Federation who last year was accused of stealing a medal member of the winning team at a U18 tournament somewhere, which he later said, it was a joke, they gave it to me. And he didn't quite explain why one of the players on the team went home without a medal of their own. But in any event, it just seems like a bit of a show down there in Brazil right now, and I'm just relegating all this uncertainty. I wish we could just have one World Cup where the run-up isn't overrun with all these discussions about will this go off properly, will there be stadia, will the federation be prepared?
It was Germany, where everything's just kind of, you know, very organized.
These German stereotypes again.
Even the prostitution ahead of the game. Remember that story where it was all efficiently arranged and accommodating for the influx of visitors.
In some good news, I heard the other day that they are actually going to allow the sale of booze in the stadium. So,
where?
In Brazil. Yeah. Maybe not in Qatar.
Check that off.
And then we've got some time to work on Qatar. But we can't get to Qatar yet because we need to get the hell out of here. But before we do that, taste the trivia, the weekly trivia challenge we do, where not only the questions, not only the answers, but the questions.
You're right, though. Not only the questions, but also the answers.
Everything is provided by you, the listener, and poor sentence slip-ups are provided by me.
We provide the prizes.
Yes. Last week, the question was, traditionally, the Canadian men's national team has gone on 4 overseas tours. Where were they, and when did they take place? The answer was, they went to Great Britain in 1888, and in 1891-92, they went to Australia in 1924, and New Zealand in 1927. The correct answer was provided by Darren Atrushi, who is now the proud owner of some, or he will be soon anyway, of some Umbro swag, and he's provided us with the Taste the Trivia question for this week, which is a little more straightforward. During the 1986 World Cup, what two goalkeepers played for Canada during the group stage matches? Wikipedia, you got it, Golden. If you were the first one with the correct answer, on our Facebook page at facebook.com/somecanadianguys, you will also be the presumably proud recipient of some swag from Umbro Canada.
It's so, a race. You better hurry.
Yeah, pretty much someone's going to have this in by the time I'm done talking somehow. So congratulations to them.
Grant already won.
I've already answered on Facebook.
You're not eligible, Grant.
Oh, Grant. Grant, you're always a winner.
Silly me.
All right, before we go, Grant, what are you up to? What are you writing about these days?
I'm continuing on with the CONCACAF Diaries. Again, does not involve me cruising around Nicaragua on a motorcycle yet.
It would if you could help it.
So you can check out that at CanadianSoccerNews.com.
Grant, where can people find you on Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter at SCGGrant.
Jamie, same question. What are you writing, and where are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter at Doyle_Jamie, and we're working on the next issue of Sportsnet magazine. Not a big soccer one, but it's good for all sports. If you're a fan of sports generally, there's a little bit of soccer in there, I should be fair, but...
You should be, but why? Why bother?
But I won't be. There's none. That's not true. it's going to be a cracker of a magazine. Why not you, literally, don't put peanut butter on
it. Why did you wink at me when you said that?
Oh, you'll find out.
You'll.
Jamie, Twitter handle?
I already did that, Doyle_Jamie, and I'm not going to spell it out like you do.
No, but I'll have to because my name is weird. As for me, you can check in on what I'm writing, which is a lot of different things, at CanadianSoccerNews.com. I believe I'll be on radio in New Brunswick this Saturday talking about the Canadian Women's National Team. And
New Brunswick.
And if you are a listener, or even if you're not, too, of the footy show on a competing media station or media company here, I was Taste the Trivia. I was on Take Your Kick earlier this week, so have a listen to that, and you can hear me swearing. It's cool.
There were some potty words.
There sure were. For more potty words, you can follow me on Twitter at Daniel Squizzato, DanielSquizzato. Especially for you, Jamie.
Gah.
You can hear the lot of us yammering again next week. Till then, we are, as always, some Canadian guys talking about soccer.